Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. Joining me for this episode once again is my beautiful wife, Sarah Eastridge.
Hello.
And we are going to be discussing for our historic 20th episode.
Number 20.
We made it. This is it. It's all downhill from here. We are going to be discussing Mr. Tony Scott's and Quentin Tarantino's True Romance.
A lot of Tony Scott going on.
I know. I didn't even think about it until we realized we did Top Gun, which is by far the greatest film I've ever seen.
Of all time.
In my life. I think we established that in that episode, and we are reestablishing it in this episode. But this is a rare treat because it's a movie that I haven't seen, that you have seen.
That I have seen, and I really like this movie.
I think this is the first time we've done something like this where the tables have turned.
Yep.
We both hadn't seen Top Gun, but this is the first time that you've seen the movie.
Truly a historic episode.
So it's exciting. And we actually, because this is the 20th episode of Missing Frames, we got out the 20th anniversary box set of Quentin Tarantino. This is a limited box set. We actually got two of them.
We did.
Do you want to tell that story?
Well, yeah. So we got two of them for gifts for each other. Mm-hmm. This was back in the day when, you know, baby Sean, baby Sarah were baby dating. but we had just started dating.
No baby driver. I wish there was baby driver.
No actual babies and no baby driver. That was a weird thing that I just said, but just to clear that up. but no, we got these for each other for gifts. I can't remember what holidays.
We used to do that a lot. It was probably Christmas. Did. We used to buy each other things that one of us already owned because we weren't living together.
Right. We had separate apartments.
I bought you like the Harry Potter books, all the books, even though I owned two or three copies of them already.
Yeah.
And then you had I think you...
You got me like Mission Impossible maybe.
Yeah, we had a lot of duplicates. The Alien movies, Lord of the Rings, Rocky, the Oceans movies.
Still can't part with the Lord of the Rings, the gold special edition box set.
It's just so pretty
to give away. So two it is.
So yeah, and Tarantino was one of those sets.
Yeah. So we did just, you know, get rid of one finally. It took us like a good 5 years to let go.
We need more room.
But then, you know, of course moving in together was interesting because we had duplicates of so much stuff and we're like, what do we do? I'm like, let's keep it all, you know.
Just because what if one of the Blu-rays scratches?
Yeah.
What are we gonna do?
Yeah,
what if we accidentally bend the artwork on one of the Blu-rays? We'll have an additional Blu-ray that we can use instead.
We had a lot of good
That's
ways
how
to
OCD
justify.
I am about movies. And I get I like if a book if a book or a movie slipcover has damage done to it, I freak out and I want to buy a completely new set or copy of the movie. So that's how I work. I mean, I am basically just crazy when it comes to that kind of stuff. But yeah, so for a while we had two copies of this. But even though we've had this for years, I've never watched True Romance. It's the only movie in this set that I have not seen. And True Romance is considered by many a classic.
Yeah.
A lot of people love this movie. I think the only Tony Scott movies I've ever seen are Top Gun and Beverly Hills Cop 2. So I don't have a good frame of reference when it comes to Tony Scott movies.
I think this might be your winner. I don't want to, you know, presume too much, but this could be the end of our marriage if you don't like it.
Wow,
just putting those stakes out there.
No, I didn't realize there were those stakes and now there's all the more pressure to enjoy it. But how did you first see True Romance? Like, when did you see it?
Good question. I've seen it several times. I'm trying to remember the first time. I believe I saw it on television. So it was probably edited, unfortunately.
Yeah. When they have all those really great, like, alternate swear words. Like, I know Die Hard.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, yippee-ki-yay, mother, you know.
Yeah.
He says yippee-ki-yay, Captain Falcon.
Oh, I love
which
it.
Which I don't know if
Who's
there
Captain
was.
Captain Falcon?
Yeah. I mean, he's a character in a Nintendo video game. But I don't know if there was ever a justification for that. Like, I think somebody was like, oh, he's a classic TV character, but it still makes no sense. It doesn't make any sense in the context.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any justification. But the point is, movies on TV, I can't imagine what it would be like to watch a Tarantino movie edited, or even like, you know, The Big Lebowski, where the F-bomb is dropped every
all the time.
Other word.
Yeah. I do know I saw it on TV first. I was younger, so maybe it was better that way. you know, and I saw it, I purchased it on DVD later. So I made the jump from TV to DVD sometime in late high school, I would say. And then that's when I really was like, oh my gosh, this is so good. I had like an online friend that had recommended it. I was really into blogging and stuff like that in high school. So a girl that lived in Maine was like, this is my favorite movie. I'm obsessed with Tarantino. And again, this is considered a Tarantino movie, which
That's
is interesting.
I get the vibe about. And yeah. It'll be interesting for me to watch it to see if he, I mean, obviously one of his traits is his dialogue. His dialogue is very recognizable. And this is the only script of his, I think maybe From Dusk Till Dawn might have been a script of his. I don't want to say that for sure because I don't know.
I'm not sure, yeah.
I know he was in it. But this might be the only script of his that he didn't direct.
Yeah.
So that'll be very interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch it and see what the disconnect is as far as Tony Scott's style. Like what it is that, because Tarantino's very stylized and Tony Scott is as well, but in a completely different
way. But yeah, with this, we were actually talking, we're like, pulled the box set and we're like, how interesting that everything in this box set celebrating 20 years of filmmaking for Tarantino is an original script and he directs it, but then there's True Romance.
It is interesting because you know he had a play in that. Like, and like I said, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure this isn't the only original script he's written that was directed by someone else.
Yeah. But it's certainly
popular. Now I want to check. Yeah. I'm going to look it up real quick. Okay. So I just looked it up on IMDb. It took me hours. We cut out most of the hours it took for me to find this because Wikipedia is a nightmare to navigate when it comes to these kinds of things. But it turns out he did write From Dusk Till Dawn.
Okay.
So it's interesting that From Dusk Till Dawn is not in this set.
Yeah.
It was directed by his best bud, Robert Rodriguez, another movie I have not seen and probably should see. And I know he was in it. But it's interesting that that's not in it, but True Romance is. And I was just reading that Tarantino considers this one of his most personal films. And I wonder if that's why he was like, yeah, I still want this in my box set.
Yeah.
Because you know, Tarantino is so pompous and arrogant that you know he had say in this what was going to be
in
this box
I think
set.
He had final say on the on everything. Like, even if you look at the cover art, it's Tarantino.
It's beautiful.
He is front and center, you know.
It is, and it's all about him. But like, the artwork is great. I love
this set. Yes, the artwork is beautiful.
If you don't have this set, just be very jealous, because we have two of them, or we did have two of them, and we're not giving it up. But that is interesting. And I, you know, I was reading a little bit about this on Wikipedia because I wanted to have some sort of basis to discuss it and hopefully not spoil it for myself. But this was I didn't realize this was before Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
It's between, so he'd already done Reservoir Dogs, which got him his acclaim. But True Romance, he intended to direct it, but then eventually it was just like, I don't care. Just somebody else can direct it. And one of the big changes was apparently his script was not, this movie is a very linear narrative, and his was kind of similar to what he'd done with Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. This was out of sequence, his script. So they changed that. But he was saying otherwise it's actually really close to what I'd written and that he enjoys the movie. Clearly he enjoys it. It's in the box set.
Yeah, it made his cut.
but it's interesting. He considered it as his most personal screenplay. And it's fascinating. I did not realize it was created in between his two like breakthrough movies, like before Pulp Fiction. I didn't realize it came out before that.
It's really interesting because from just everything I know about Tarantino, he doesn't strike me as the type of person to give up that control to someone else. So I'm really curious how that did actually come to be.
I wonder if it's just because it was so early in his career that it just didn't, like, it was, he hadn't really established himself yet.
Yeah.
Reservoir Dogs was popular, but it wasn't Pulp Fiction. I know Pulp Fiction got nominated for everything. It got him all his acclaim and it made money. Whereas Reservoir Dogs, I think, was much more modest in its success. So maybe it was just like he was just starting to taste that success and was like, yeah, if it's going to be this difficult to make True Romance, I'd rather just somebody else direct it.
Yeah. So, Sean, since you have not seen this, I know this is typically your line as the host, but since you haven't seen this, I, as a fan of this movie, want to know, going into it, what are you expecting? Have you heard anything about this movie?
I might have gotten the movie spoiled
for me. Okay.
But I don't know anything about it. I know there's some romance involved.
Some true romance, perhaps.
Yeah, it could be true. It could be true. I know Christian Slater is in it. I'm not 100% who plays. I have the Wikipedia article up. So it's, Patricia Arquette. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. I like her.
We're a fan.
I love her work in A Nightmare on Elm Street 3. I think that is her finest performance. And from that point on, her career has gone downhill completely. What has she done? She hasn't done anything.
Nothing. I can think of.
She hasn't won an Oscar for any particular movie by a particular filmmaker.
I don't think she had a long-running, pretty successful show on CBS either.
No. So it's all downhill. So she disappeared after True Romance.
She did. That was the top of her career.
Nightmare on Elm Street 3, True Romance, and that was it. That's awesome, though. I'm excited. I know nothing. I knew that Tony Scott directed it. I knew that Quentin Tarantino wrote it. I don't really know. I assume there are gangsters involved. I assume people swear a lot.
Do you know the genre?
I assume it's violent. I'm sure it's like noir-esque, like crime thriller with elements of comedy in it. Just because that's what Tarantino has, that's his bread and butter. So other than that, I don't know anything about it.
It's kind of a great way to go into it.
That's the best way to go to any one of these movies.
Yeah.
And again, I've heard people talk about it. I know.
It's a bit iconic.
People love this movie. Some people say it's their favorite Tarantino movie, even though it technically isn't Tarantino. I'm very excited to watch it. That's my level of excitement is definitely high. I hope it lives up to my expectations. I hope there is true romance in True Romance. Otherwise, I'm going to be very upset. when was the last time you saw it?
It's been a good 5 to 7 years. Okay. I don't know the exact time, but it's been a while. So I'm really excited to revisit this.
Great.
I love it. I just love everything about our main characters. So
awesome.
It'll be fun.
Well, let's get to it.
Alrighty.
Now available to own on video cassette.
And we're back.
Back.
We've just watched True Romance.
How do you feel, Sean?
I was very satisfied.
Oh, good. Thank God.
There was truth. There was romance. And there was everything in between. No, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, what a relief.
It was great.
Our marriage is saved.
I really, really, all of it. Everything was great.
So fun.
Yeah. It's fun. And it's so funny because if someone were to describe, if I am to describe this to anyone, it's that it is a Quentin Tarantino movie directed by Tony Scott, because that's exactly what it feels
like. That's what you got.
Right. Even from the beginning, like when the two characters, what are their names? It's
Clarence and Alabama.
So when they
can't forget those names. Come on.
when they're making sweet nectar love with one another, it's
very reminiscent of something.
Blue lighting, backlit, and I was like, oh, Top Gun, great. Yeah. We just watched this movie. It was very clear. I was like, yes, Tony Scott directed this
very
movie.
Stylized lovemaking scenes.
Exactly. But and his aesthetic is all over it. This is unmistakably a Tony Scott movie.
It is.
It feels, the lighting and his cinematographer, who I believe has worked with him before, Jeffrey Kimball. Yeah, he did Beverly Hills Cop 2 and Top Gun before this. And it has the same kind of vibe. Lots of close-ups, lots of it feels like at least the movies I've seen take place in the summer in LA. It's always like the lighting
very
is
colorful.
Very, yeah, the
lots
lighting,
of color.
It's got this very like LA lighting. The sun is always blaring. The lighting always reflects this. Rooms are always very backlit and smoky.
Yeah.
So it felt very much like a Tony Scott movie, but it was unmistakably Tarantino in the dialogue and the plot itself, which is very dialogue driven. It's interesting. We were talking about how one of the biggest changes they made was that apparently his script was out of sequence. I feel like I can't imagine this movie happening out of sequence. I don't know what it would what that would look like.
I'm not sure, but Tarantino's always been very positive about how it was restructured. So there's no bad blood. He said he loved the final cut. You know, he's been very outspoken about that, especially since Tony Scott's death. He talked a lot about how people were like, oh, you know, it
how
was restructured.
Yeah,
exactly. And he was like, he did a great job. Like, he's always been very, like, supportive of how it was restructured. But you're right. Like, I'm not quite sure. I know there's a really big difference. Don't want to get into, like, spoiler territory yet, so maybe we'll mention it later. But
no, we can talk spoilers right now. I mean, this movie's been out since 1993. So, I mean, honestly, well, you know, I would feel upset if somebody spoiled this for me. Thankfully, it was not spoiled like I thought it was. For some reason, I thought they died at the end.
So they, in Tarantino's original script, Clarence dies. So that is a very major change that Tony Scott makes.
Okay.
But as far as sequencing, I have no idea how they would have done it. Well, but that is a pretty big change.
I'm glad he didn't.
I am too. I love
it. I was expecting him to die because I felt like I'd seen, like, heard somewhere that, oh, either he died or they both died.
Oh, good. And, well, I'm glad you heard wrong.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it. And I was reading this quote on Wikipedia where Tarantino said when he saw the final product, he was very happy that they didn't die.
Yes.
And he's like, it just fits the tone of the movie better.
Right.
And it does. I mean, it works better for the movie. If they both die, then it's almost like, what's the point? I would have enjoyed this movie. You know, typically I'm not someone who watches a movie and is like, oh, it's got to be happy and everyone's got to get away scot-free. But the movie definitely has this kind of, it's violent and it's brutal. And it's dark at times, but there's this kind of sweetness to the movie. It's very romantic.
It is very romantic.
You know, and it should be. It's in the title, which is what I was saying. If it wasn't, I'd be very upset. But it is. It feels, and it felt like the natural ending and conclusion to those characters is that they should get away and they should live happily ever after.
Yes, I agree. And that moment on the beach at the end is very sweet.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you see that they're in Mexico. They clearly had a briefcase of money, right? So they got to start anew, stay out of trouble, and they had a kid.
Yeah.
Which is super cool because the child actor is actually Patricia Arquette's son in real life.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. And now he's like, what, 20, late 20s.
Well,
so.
I've seen her son's life. It's a movie called Boyhood. And everyone should check it out. You know, he grows up to go to college and very, very interesting movie. Boyhood is actually a sequel,
spiritual
sequel to this movie. Very, very different in tone. But you know, right from the get-go, I was, you know, it was clear it was very Tarantino with the, you know, the opening is him talking to the woman in the bar, like, oh yeah, my favorite movies are this and that, and I love Kung Fu and I want to go see Kung Fu movies, and the lady he's talking to is like, ah, no, no. And I was like, man, this is my life.
Uh-huh. Well,
not at bars.
I knew.
I didn't go out to bars. I was like, man, I can remember just being like, and boy, oh boy, Return of the King might be the best of all three, and they're going to screen them at the AMC. You want to go? No.
And then you see a dead look in the woman's eyes.
Yeah, typically. So that was just great, and a really great opening to the film.
Yeah.
But also right off the bat, you know, it's like, oh, of course this is Tarantino. You can feel it. It's and it's great because I was nervous about the Tony Scott's direction, and I haven't seen a lot of Tony Scott movies. This is easily the best movie of his that I've seen, no question. But his movies are typically very stylized. When I think of Tony Scott, I think of the style that Michael Bay would eventually destroy.
Oh, no.
You know, lots of close-ups, lots of action, slow motion, very saturated cinematography where it's like very grungy and the colors are a little, you know, very saturated. So when I think of Tony Scott, I think of, he kind of was. I mean, he'd worked with Jerry Bruckheimer, the famous producer, and Bruckheimer made all of those Michael Bay movies. He kind of became like, yes, I am the action producer. I make the action movies. And so Tony Scott has always, and, you know, Top Gun only reinforced that. style. It's a very bro movie, you know,
everyone is bro.
You know, very manly movie, ridiculous scenes and ridiculous kind of rock soundtrack. So I was thinking of Tony Scott in those, in that realm. And Beverly Hills Cop 2 is not a bad movie, but it's not as good as the first one. It's definitely a little bit more action oriented.
Yeah, and I haven't seen that. And I haven't seen Days of Thunder, which a lot of people talk about.
Yeah,
too.
And that's very much, you know, in race cars and hot women and men, and, you know, Tom Cruise is in it. So I think I was wondering, how I was like, man, I wonder how his style will, if it will clash with Tarantino. And like I said, this is unmistakably his style, Tony Scott's style, but he, it's great. And I'm interested to see other movies of his because he clearly is a fan of the script and the screenplay. It clearly was the inspiration here. And you were saying this was Tarantino's first screenplay?
First thing he ever wrote.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I mean, of course, you know, he couldn't sell it. And then all of a sudden, like, yes.
Well, apparently he sold it for $50,000, which which is just in hindsight, it
sounds
amazing.
Great. It sounds great. Yeah, but that's not a lot of money.
It's not a lot of money. That's like kind of an average salary.
That's
for,
the minimum,
you know,
I think the Writers Guild of America allowed at the time.
So he made the minimum.
So he made the minimum wage.
You know, and it's like, yeah, it's a big chunk of money. But for what? I mean, if anyone has ever written something lengthy, you put a lot of time into it. It's a personal feat, you know, but yeah, $50,000.
That's incredible.
I will say, you know, I'm so glad he sold it.
I know.
And this happened because
I'm
what
glad it worked out. It's
what
just
a dang movie.
Again, it feels it is interesting that this came out before Pulp Fiction. So it's like right in the midst. And there are a lot of actors. I mean, I was like, oh, Samuel L. Jackson's in this. And he's in it for 2 seconds and he gets killed immediately.
It was so fun for me to hear you say things aloud. And then I had to just keep my mouth shut because I'm like, ah, I can't say anything.
It was just incredible. I was like, why have him in the movie at all? And Samuel L. Jackson at this point, I don't know. I think maybe he had worked with Tony Scott before, so maybe Tony Scott was like, here, come be a cameo.
It's possible.
In this movie.
I mean, there are so many people in this
movie.
Yeah,
I think, I mean, I guess the movie didn't have a huge budget. It was like 12, 13 million. And it didn't, it was a box office failure technically. It didn't make a lot of money. And, you know, it's interesting that I wonder all the star power that's in it, if they were all kind of like, I mean, you read that script and you love it. So immediately you're like, yes, I'm on board. And Tony Scott, sure, why not? I wonder if the actors were kind of there, like if Samuel L. Jackson was doing him a favor in a way. Like,
it's
please, we can put your name in the credits and people will come see it. And then be very angry when you die, when you get shot immediately.
Get 38 seconds of screen time.
Exactly.
And then say goodbye.
So, but something else. So this is, apparently there's a Tarantino connected universe.
So
I didn't know this. That's ridiculous.
This is just something that I had learned like maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, or not 5 or 6, whenever Inglourious Basterds came out. What year was that?
It was 2009, 2008.
Okay, so maybe I'm kind of
right around there.
Kind of right.
Yeah.
So the producer in True Romance, Donowitz, Lee Donowitz, his grandfather is the Bear Jew from Inglourious Basterds.
That is amazing.
Is that nuts?
That's amazing.
And if anyone doesn't know this, and it's really fascinating, and obviously do not Google this unless you've seen all of Tarantino's films, but all of his films are connected, I think, except one, which I will
Death
hopefully.
Death Proof, maybe?
No.
I know
it's
he
the one
like
with
Death
Pam
Proof.
Greer. Sorry.
Jackie Brown.
Yeah, okay. Jackie Brown is not
And Jackie
connected.
Brown feels like a singular effort.
It is.
It feels very... It's the least Tarantino movie.
Right. But all his other movies are connected. It's kind of, it reminds me of Stephen King. Like Stephen King, all his books are connected. You know? So it's super cool. But it's like, that's the Bear Jew's, you know.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
It's super cool. That's his grandkid.
And was there anything, is Inglourious Basterds
Reservoir
the only movie?
Dogs, I believe. Okay. Reservoir Dogs mentions one of the characters, I wish I could remember who, but in Reservoir Dogs, one of the main characters does mention Alabama. He was like, oh, I'm going to go meet up
that's
with
so
an
funny.
Alabama.
That's
and
so
sure,
funny.
That's a little speculative.
That's great,
but...
though. That's so cool. That's the connected universe
is
the way
is
they should
so cool?
be done.
Is it so cool?
It's so cool. You're so cool.
You're so cool.
But that's just wonderful.
Yeah,
I love that.
It's
I love,
super cool.
I love that this is a connected universe. But so, I can't think of another movie with Christian Slater in it that I've seen.
A lot of people give him a lot of crap, and I'm like, go back, watch this movie. You will probably have a different opinion
great.
On him.
He's great. I know I've seen him in other stuff, but obviously it doesn't stand out to me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's wonderful in this, and Patricia Arquette is great.
Yes.
There was a point where halfway through the movie I was like, oh, no. I was like, it's all right. What else can she do? And she'd kind of become like a background character, and I was like, oh, I wish... She was doing a little bit more.
Be careful what you ask
for. As soon as I started thinking that.
Yeah, let's talk about that scene.
The James Gandolfini scene. So, first of all, James Gandolfini
Terrifying.
Is in this movie.
Yeah.
And amazing. Yep. I didn't know he was in this movie. I probably should have known because I should have been paying attention to the opening credits. But
Talk about a brutal fight scene.
That was great.
Yeah.
Apparently, it took them 5 days to shoot that.
Oh my God. And you can just watch certain scenes and you're like, they are actually getting hurt. Like, there's no way. Like,
it's all real blood. They're getting thrown like through showers. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
What a great scene. And yeah, it's brutal. Lots of Tony Scott trademark slow motion. This movie is so violent.
It's very insane. Violent. I think some people, I mean, it really is a blend of romance and violence, which is bizarre.
Yeah.
But it's pulled off but in such
that,
a way.
Isn't romance... Violent? Isn't that true romance?
I guess.
Violence.
According
violence
to Tarantino
and
Tony Scott, yeah. I guess so. But yeah, I mean, I love that scene. I always root for Alabama. I think she's so awesome.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah.
And I love, I mean, like, that was just a great scene. And it was perfect because, like I said, I felt like, oh, she's not really involved. She's kind of, because Clarence had kind of taken charge
right.
and was like, now he's the one making all the deals and things like that. And I was like, well, maybe this is just going to be them kind of escaping and things like that. And so I don't know what Alabama would be able to contribute. But then it's like, you have that scene and it's like, she kills James Gandolfini.
And she kills him brutal. In a spectacular way.
She beats him with a toilet
lid. She
kills
him like three times over.
And then she shoots him with a shotgun.
Stabs
and then
his
she
feet
just
with a cork,
starts
corkscrew.
Beating him to, or he's dead already. Yeah. I was about to say beating him to death, but he's dead. He's
beating the dead man.
That was a great scene. I also love, again, another great scene. Gary Oldman, who I thought was going to be like, oh, he's going to be the villain throughout, and he gets killed.
So good, right?
But what a great like reverse, because you are first of all, you're like, no, don't go talk to him. Don't go do it.
Yeah.
And you don't really, and the movie never, I don't know if this is a good or bad thing. And I feel like everyone interprets it differently. If there was anything I would knock the movie on, it's that you don't really, the characters feel like characters. They're not really developed. They're kind of types. And you know that he's a film nerd, but it's like, where the hell did he get all this skill? Like to go into like a violent pimp's
we
hideaway.
Know the answer to this. He got it from Elvis.
That's right. Elvis gives him the inspiration.
Elvis appears to him as, you know,
who,
a
I'm
ghost
almost
or
positive.
An apparition.
I'm going to look it up right now. But I was like, who is Elvis? And I realized it's Val Kilmer and I'm looking it up. Yes.
It's
Val Kilmer as mentor.
Yeah. So he can't be Elvis because Elvis's estate would not lend any of the likeness, the music, anything to this movie.
It's
they just refused.
Why?
I don't know. They were just
probably
like,
because
nope,
they were like,
sorry.
Oh, it's dirty. It's
yeah.
a dirty, violent
so,
movie.
Tony Scott was, you know, upset about it because he had planned this, you know, whole, he wanted like authentic
well,
music,
sure. Elvis
original
is a
music.
Theme running through the movie.
Absolutely. So, you know, we have not Elvis, but The Mentor. And then we have covers of The Mentor
right.
slash Elvis.
But they talk about Elvis.
They do
they
talk
were
about,
able to talk about him.
I guess there's some legal lines.
Yeah.
What you can and cannot do and
sure.
stuff. So, but yeah, Elvis was great.
Yeah.
It was great that he was like his conscience, like guiding him.
Yeah.
But not necessarily in a good way.
Well, the first time it happened, I didn't even realize what was going on. I
yeah.
was like...
Who's
what? And then
him
and
in
then
the
it
mirror.
Was like, oh, it's Elvis. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was funny, but it was just like, yeah, where Clarence is like a total badass. Like
he
where
is.
Did he get all this
I,
knowledge
it's all that
from?
Like pent up nerd rage, I think,
yeah.
you know.
Cuz it was like,
had
oh,
to be unleashed.
I work in a comic book shop. It is funny like
I make minimum
the
wage.
The opening 20 minutes or so feels like an entirely different movie. Like a
yeah.
setup for an entirely different movie.
For sure.
And then it just goes off on a tangent.
Yeah.
And the movie constantly, you know, it's a Tarantino's great at this, but it's like it you never fully know what's going to happen to anyone.
Yeah.
Like cuz I thought I knew, oh, the movie's going in this direction and then Gary Oldman's dead. He's shot
yeah.
right in the junk and
right in the junk.
that was again another great scene. I mean, Tarantino is great at building suspense through dialogue, and Tony Scott, I love Gary Oldman. First of all, Gary Oldman's amazing. Can we just sing his praises for a little bit? He's amazing in everything, and especially Lost in Space, where he plays Dr. Smith. But I loved him in this movie. And what was the story about him getting the part in this movie?
I think Tony Scott called him. It was like, hey, man, did you get the script that I sent you? And he's like, no, I haven't gotten a chance to read it. And he's like, well, you are basically just going to play this white guy that thinks he's black and he's a drug dealer. And, you know, that's pretty much it. And he was like, yes, sign me up. Like, that was it. He didn't read it. He just showed up the next day or whatever.
I
was
have
like,
IMDb pulled up. So it says Gary Oldman met with Tony Scott about the project, told him he hadn't read the script he'd been sent, then asked Scott what the part was like. And he said, you're playing a white guy who thinks he's black and you're a killer pimp. Oldman laughed immediately and accepted the role. How awesome is that? And he's great. I loved him shining the light on everybody. Yeah. And then you think, like, you're like, I honestly thought watching it, I was like, okay, he's going to get beat up and somehow he's going to escape just barely. But then he just kills everybody, which is amazing.
It takes such an amazing and dark turn. And you're like, oh,
then,
this is what this
movie is
about.
And then it turns into a runaway movie where he is they're on the road.
Got all the coke with them.
Suitcase of cocaine.
Yep.
Classic.
Can we talk about Brad Pitt for a minute? Because
he's just in this movie.
What a like
randomly.
Yeah, random but shining star. Like, so funny. He plays a stoner that does not leave the couch. He's the roommate of Clarence's friend.
You know what's funny is apparently Judd Apatow got the idea for Pineapple Express because of his character. Because I wanted to see a movie where Brad Pitt, that character, is involved in the action and is like has to escape from hitmen coming after him. So apparently this movie gave us Pineapple Express, which might be a good or a bad thing depending on how big of a fan you are of Pineapple Express.
But that's still pretty
That's a cool idea. Yeah, it's cool to think that
this
inspired
it. Well, I
know
Brad Pitt was, I think he was given free rein and he pretty much improvised all his stuff on the couch.
He's great in this
and
movie.
He's fantastic, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is like one of my favorite parts. I always look forward to it,
and I love him giving very detailed directions he's got guns pointed at him and he's like, oh, just take a right and then you take another right, go down the street, and they're just kind of like, well, all right, he's giving us directions.
Well, do you think he dies?
No.
Are you sure?
No, I don't think he's dead. I'd like to believe that
he's still on that couch.
He's going to show up on. We didn't watch all the way through the credits, but I believe there's a stinger at the end where Brad Pitt shows up. He's like, hey, because Michael Rappaport got away, his character.
That's true.
So I think they maybe join up with them later.
He
has
to go on to make the Tribe documentary.
Yeah, True Romance 2. They all meet up together, and it's great. So he kills Gary Oldman, and he's like, we got to hit the road. We got to get going. And he goes and sees his dad, Dennis Hopper, who, again, wonderful actor, and they have an amazing scene with him and Christopher Walken.
Yes.
With Christopher Walken walking in the door. See what I did there? And that scene, again, sometimes you forget. Tarantino is so stylized and so he's become like a brand unto himself that it's kind of you take him for granted. And this is so early in his career. So this is fresh Tarantino before like he got very into himself. Not that, I mean, I love all of Tarantino's movies, but you definitely like he has a style now.
He's a little egotistical.
He's egotistical. And now he has the fulfillment of knowing that people worship him. So it kind of comes through. And you forget just how good at dialogue he is.
Yes.
And a movie like True Romance, which, you know, apparently was his first film, it's just there on full display. And that Sicilian scene where he's explaining the history of Sicilians to Christopher Walken.
Yep.
And of course, I mean, the performances are great. Christopher Walken's great. And the interplay between him and Dennis Hopper is great. But that was just such a fascinating scene.
Yeah, it's so good. And you know that Dennis Hopper at that point knows he's gonna die. It's over. Like, this guy isn't gonna let him live no matter what he says. So he's like, that was a hard death for me.
Yeah.
Because
it's like he helped his son.
He did.
His son hasn't seen him for 3 years. They reconciled, and you want him to live. I was hoping, you know, I knew he was probably dead, but
you kind of knew those guys were too bad. Yeah. Like, they're gonna kill him, whatever. But it's like, you know, I like that he lit a cigarette and he's like, let me just antagonize these jerks and, you know, give them what's coming. But I know that Tarantino said that this scene was the best scene he had ever written. The only time he ever changed that is the beginning of Inglourious Basterds. So for many, many years, he was like, this is my, you know, this is a showcase of my good writing.
Right.
Like, you know, and I would agree with him. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I mean, it is amazing. It's tough. Tarantino has lots of, I mean, Inglourious Basterds is a great example.
Lot to choose
that,
from.
Yeah. Well, I mean, lots of dialogue driven scenes that are just fantastic. And this is a great one. It's so fascinating. I'm still kind of trying to get over the fact that Tony Scott and Quentin Tarantino were like a match made in heaven. Like, this just, their styles melded so well And, you know, you've got kind of the more ridiculous, goofy, stylized mentality of Tony Scott, but it just works for this movie. It doesn't feel as gimmicky as like in Top Gun, where it was like, yeah, we're all hot and stuff. But I recognized a lot of the similarities in the style the material was there this time around.
It was.
It works for the movie, and it's great. It's a match made in heaven. So another actor I loved was whoever plays Elliot Blitzer, the actor who gets them the connection to the big producer.
He's so funny.
Yeah, who plays him? It's Bronson Pinchot. I'm almost positive this guy was in Beverly Hills Cop, the first one. I'm looking it up now. Yeah, he played Serge in Beverly Hills Cop, who's like a very like I don't know where my accent is from, but he has this very exaggerated accent, and he plays with Eddie. They play with each other. Eddie Murphy. This sounds really dirty. What I'm trying to say is their dialogue, their banter with each other is so funny, and I was like, that's got to be him. He's so good. It's interesting that the only Beverly Hills Cop movie he wasn't in was the one that Tony Scott directed. And then he happened to be in this movie. Because I was like, I wonder.
Maybe he was busy.
It's been a while since I've seen Beverly Hills Cop 2. So I was like, I can't remember if he was in that movie. But it's funny that he ended up in True Romance instead. And he's great. That's a part that could easily have been forgettable.
And I think because, you know, he's wearing a wire in the final scene.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny to see like the cops cracking up at what's going on.
Know.
And I was like in stitches. That was like, this brilliant. Is so good.
You have Clarence screaming at him, and you think this guy's going to die.
Yeah.
And the cops are just laughing. They're laughing. They're like, oh my God, this guy's great.
And then they're
like, oh no, he's actually going to do it. And then they're like, you just stick with it. Like, it's like, you guys are such
jerks. They're not
going to
pull him out. They're like, you're either dead or, you know. And then thankfully Clarence is like, oh man, bro, made a mistake. Hug it out.
Running commentary from the cops is brilliant, but
is.
that character Elliot, the actor Bronson Pinchot, he is so good. His comic timing is so perfect that it makes it elevates the role to a whole other level. I mean, everything, the elements are there, the dialogue is good, but like it's his performance that makes that character unforgettable.
I agree.
It's funny, during that final shootout scene, it was tough because it's like everyone dies. And you're like, no. I was like, I like them, and I like the cops, and I like the mobsters.
But you kind of realize at that point that they all need to die so our happy couple
can get away
and no one will be chasing them.
And then they scared me half to death, even though I thought that I knew that they died at the end. I was so upset when it's like he got shot in the head. What? I thought he just like got hit in the shoulder, and then he's on the ground, and it's like he's gonna pull.
Yeah, you were pretty vocal about it. I'm just sitting there with my mouth shut, and you're like, "Oh my God, is he dead? Is he dead?
So
he can't be dead." And I'm just sitting there like, "La la la la, don't say anything, Sarah. He hasn't seen this movie."
Because I was like, and again, I was thinking, it's way less satisfying of a movie if they die, if he dies, if one of them dies. And so I was like, oh no, I don't want him to die. Not just because I like him, but I felt like, oh, the movie's going to work so much better if they get away.
Yep.
I was ready to like love the movie regardless, but I was really rooting for them to get out of there. So when it turns out he just got grazed, I was like, yes. But then everyone else died, except for Michael Rapaport. I like that I'm not using his character's name.
I don't remember his character's name.
The reason is because I know he directed a Tribe Called Quest, their documentary, Beats, Rhymes, and Life, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
So I know him from that movie. I don't know if I've seen him in a movie before. So this is what a great introduction to his acting talent.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's great in this one.
I mean, it's amazing. Tarantino makes you love the bad guys. And before I was like, oh, I know this is going to be like a crime thriller. Like somehow that's going to get involved. But I don't know if his movie has ever had so many lovable characters. I mean, that's weird to say because his movies all have lovable characters.
No, but you are rooting for people.
Yeah.
You are falling in love with the couple as they're falling in love with each other. You are. You know, it's just like,
it's very,
I got bonded to this
because
movie really quickly.
Because it is a romance, you almost root for them a little bit more.
You do.
Not that you don't root for the characters in his other movies, but it does, it felt like I really loved, like everyone. It's because, like, you know, again, Michael Rapaport's character is so goofy. He's like, I got the part and I've been auditioning and I wanted to be an actor. So it's like, oh, good for you. And you want him to escape at the end. But I wanted everyone to escape at the end. I loved all the characters so much. And it's just a testament to Tarantino's wonderful abilities that they did. that they made it. And so do you have like what is your favorite moment? What's your favorite scene? You started crying like 10 minutes into the movie and I was like, what's happening? That was also a bad omen. I'm like, oh God, are they gonna die?
She's just really Can we explain to the audience about my crying?
Yeah, so you explain it because I'm not sure.
I cry a lot. I mostly cry at happiness. Like very sad things rarely get to me. But if something's really overwhelmingly happy, I just start crying. And well, this ties in perfectly with my favorite scene because I started crying during it. But the scene where Clarence and Alabama have slept together. The next morning he wakes up, she's not in bed. He goes to find her. They're out on the roof near the billboard and everything.
No, you started crying
before that. Did I?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay, fine.
So maybe
whatever.
You kept crying. The scene I remember you crying during was the comic book shop.
Yeah, that got me too.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just so sweet. And it reminds me of you. I'm going to be gushy a little bit. I don't know. Like, I was like, oh, nerds.
Just
I love
like Clarence.
It.
Nerdy, taking down pimps.
Yep.
Taking down Gary Oldman.
Yeah, you're just like him.
Yeah, exactly. So.
But my favorite scene is when they're on, you know, they're outside and she is like, trying to tell him I love you, but hey, guess what? I'm a prostitute. Whoops.
Yeah.
And he doesn't care and he loves her anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's stupid.
It is.
But it's
like, sweet, though.
It's really
I didn't
sweet.
See that coming at all. I didn't like, again, I knew she was probably a prostitute, but I thought she was like, oh, I'm off duty. So I thought it was going to come back like, oh, yeah, she's a prostitute and they have to figure out.
No, that
how
was
to
like her job.
Yeah.
But then
I didn't realize, like,
him.
I didn't realize that his boss had basically hired her
to
do that.
Like,
I thought
that
was a nice little twist.
The world's best boss or the world's worst boss?
I
like, let's talk about that.
And again, I can't believe he's like, yeah, I worked at a comic shop for 3 years and I'm just going to kill. I'm like a total BAMF and I'm going to kill everybody.
Hey.
That's still like my biggest. If there's a fault with this film, it's like, what? Where did that come from?
He has an active imagination. He reads a lot and he has an active imagination.
That's true. But
there
he should
you
be
go.
Using. He's into kung fu. He should be like using samurai swords and stuff more so than like
he
shooting.
Had some pretty
people.
Good moves. I don't know.
That's true.
You know, but right. But yeah, that's my favorite scene. Okay. I love it. I love the whole
I did
darn
love,
movie.
Yeah, I loved that scene. It's tough. I mean, the first 20 minutes, like I said, the first 20 minutes of this movie feels like an entirely different movie
it
almost
does,
because
yeah.
It feels like a self-contained movie.
Yeah,
like you could have had the whole movie be that.
Yeah, and then we're like, and then part two.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it is a lot happens. It's like they meet, they fall, you establish very quickly their characters. Like he's lonely, he's trying to find a nerd like him to love movies.
He gets shot down by one woman who's like, I'm
yeah,
not going
exactly.
to kung fu
so
movies with
it was
you,
very
you weirdo.
Like I was frankly like, how is this movie gonna? I knew it was 2 hours long. I was like, how's this movie gonna play out over 2 hours? Because it felt like when Gary Oldman gets killed and they run off, it's like that felt like a whole movie. Like it had a three-act structure.
Yeah.
They meet. He finds out about the pimp and then he goes and kills the pimp. It's like that's the conclusion to the movie. But it was just the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
So I loved all of that, though. If I could consider – I'm going to cheat and consider that all one scene. But I don't know if it's my favorite. I think my favorite might have been I don't know.
It's so good.
I'm thinking of like every time I think of a scene that might be my favorite, I think of another one that might be my favorite. You know, that might be the sign that this is a great movie.
But fantastic.
I think the first 30 minutes of the movie, just everything, the meeting, him going to confront Gary Oldman, that was all just great.
Yeah.
And then I loved the Sicilian scene with Christopher Walken, which was just, great dialogue, great performances from both of them.
The ending is
fantastic.
Right up there with me.
The ending is hysterical because, you know, all the gunmen come into one room. It's like the Western showdown with like all the different parties involved.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's going to die, but it was just, it was played almost
just
for,
bombastic.
It was played for laughs. I mean, it was clearly played for laughs with everyone shouting at everybody.
Yeah.
And then the guy, like, Elliot being like, I think I'm going to head out.
I'm,
is it
you're,
okay
you're
if
good
I,
with me
I'm
going
good.
Now?
I'm going to get going.
I fulfilled my part.
Yeah, it was just so good. And so I think, but if I had to pick maybe the James Gandolfini,
the fight
Patricia
scene.
Arquette showdown.
Yeah.
Where Alabama, like, they're fighting each
intense.
Other. That might have been my favorite. And that just intercut with I almost called him James. I almost called him James Murray because he reminds me so much of James. He's way better. He's a way more interesting character than James from Twin Peaks, but he looks like him a lot. But Clarence is just talking about like the guy reading the magazine. He's getting like, what's the best? Like, it's like you have Alabama being punched in the face, and then you cut to him being like, what's the best burger you have? I want the biggest, baddest burger. And it's just hysterical the way they undercut the tension of that scene, which is like, oh my god, she's gonna die, with him ordering burgers and like talking about Elvis. I loved that. And then I loved Alabama, just her loyalty to her man, and just beating just like, he's slapping her around, like beating her to a bloody pulp. I mean, she's beat up bad, and she's just laughing and flipping him the middle finger, and but then he's, I loved that. And I loved, I don't know if this is the first thing James Gandolfini has done. Let me look that up real quick. Okay, so it's not the first thing he's done. He did The Last Boy Scout, which I believe was also directed by Tony Scott, but this was like his fifth movie. And it was like, he was always in like, I don't know if he was in a big role like this. I don't know. I haven't seen those movies, so I don't know for sure. But he's uncredited in The Last Boy Scout. I assume that means he didn't have a speaking role. But in this, it's like he's a natural star. Like, it was like,
he really is.
No wonder he got to be Tony Soprano. You know, it's like, it's not too much of a stretch. Again, another, it just speaks to Tony Scott's great casting. I mean, this is another part that could have maybe been forgettable. I mean, not the scene is unforgettable, but like the character himself, you could have just hated him, but you kind of like, he's so good that you kind of love to hate him.
Yeah.
But I loved their banter with each other. James Gandolfini is great. The cast is great. I mean, that's probably my, I can't pick a favorite scene, but that's one that stood out to me as like, this is just brilliant filmmaking, and it's just brilliant in general. But I sincerely loved it.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, definitely the best Tony Scott movie I've seen.
I haven't seen many. I feel like I need to keep going with this. I mean,
I'm happy because a lot of people really love Tony Scott, and I haven't seen a movie of his I've really liked. And it's been tough because it's like, I have a lot of respect for him. And especially when he, you know, unfortunately passed away, I wanted to really engage in that conversation and be like, I really loved this movie that he'd done, but I hadn't seen anything that he'd done that I'd really enjoyed. So it's nice to see this and really like feel like, yes, Tony Scott, all right, this is amazing. Again, really impressed with how well their styles merged, how they melded very well, which I was not expecting.
Kind of like the perfect pairing.
It really was. And, I haven't seen From Dusk Till Dawn. Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez are besties, so I know they probably were a bit, Tarantino played an active role. Literally, he is a role in the movie. I'm sure he was a bit more actively involved with that than he was with True Romance, but kind of makes you wish that maybe they could have worked together again, Tarantino and Tony Scott.
I always feel that way too, because it's just such, in my mind, it is such a perfect movie. It has all the elements. You go through all the waves of emotion.
Yeah,
you know?
You really do.
Clearly, I was crying. As
romance. It works on pretty much every level.
And I think it was
level.
It's cast perfectly, in my opinion. I know that Drew Barrymore was like the first choice for Alabama.
Well, she would have been good, but
I can't.
It's hard to think of it.
Yeah, it is.
It's like
when
people tell you like Tom Selleck was originally the first choice for Indiana Jones.
Yeah,
it's
you can't see
that at all.
No.
Drew Barrymore,
I just see a guy with a mustache and a cowboy hat. I'm like, no.
But like Drew Barrymore, I can see, but.
Tony Scott was like really, he loved Drew Barrymore, but I think she was just unavailable. So it was going to go to her if she had been available.
Very interesting. Yeah. I'm so happy that Patricia Arquette.
But Patricia Arquette
I finally
developed a great bond.
I don't know if it's better than Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
I don't know.
But she's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Well, her and Tony Scott had a really cool relationship on set.
Oh, really? What was it?
Yeah. So they, it's actually not going to sound so cool when
I say
it. But no, they had a very good relationship, great working relationship, cared for each other deeply. She had a really hard time getting into certain scenes. And she had Tony Scott slap her in the face.
Oh, my God.
Yep. Slapped her right in the face
on
several occasions.
At least she did it.
No, she, it was like completely.
She was like, you do this.
Yes, it was completely it's okay. Funny. It was allowed, whatever. But she's like, do this. I need to feel something. And then she'd go right into the scene.
Wow.
And you see that. And I can only imagine she probably got slapped quite a bit before the big fight scene because she delivers a hell of a performance.
She's so in that headspace. And Well, I'm glad. I mean, I don't know if you've heard the story of Sidney Lumet. He writes about it in Making Movies, his book, which is amazing. Everyone should read it. But Sidney Lumet talks about there was a scene where a woman wasn't, I can't remember what movie and who the actress was, but she wasn't quite on the level of emotional turbulence that he needed. So without any prompting, he went up to her and slapped her as hard as he could. And she burst into tears and it worked for the scene. And she ran up and thanked him. And he was like, I've never physically assaulted an actor or physically motivated an actor ever again. He's like, I felt so dirty.
Oh,
and she
God.
Was thanking me and she was so like, yes, that's what I needed. But he was like, I've never done that again.
Yeah.
So I always feel really iffy when I hear
like
about that stuff.
You can't pull that off these days.
No. And even like,
not that you should.
Yeah. Tony Scott, I can't imagine if I were a director, I can't imagine woman or man, someone coming up to me and be like, I need you to slap me as hard as you can to get me into the scene. I don't know if I could do it.
I think he was like, are you sure? And
yeah.
She's like, yes, just do it. It's fine. And he's like, okay. And I don't think he like punched her in the face, but I think he definitely, you know, hit
That's
her. And
Hollywood is all about.
Yeah. And he talks about it openly. She talks about it openly or excuse me. You know, he talked about it openly in like interviews and stuff.
Yeah.
But she was like, no, you know, like, don't try to make this dirty. Like, this isn't a bad thing. This is like me as an actress. I needed to get in the right mind frame. And thank God she did.
Yeah.
Because she's like a tour de force in this movie, in my opinion.
So this movie, we know it wasn't a box office success. But what I want to find out right now is, did it have any awards attention directed its way?
Oh, it's a good, I really don't know.
I'm gonna look this up because, okay, so I mean, it has a 92% of Rotten Tomatoes, which is, you know, absolutely
well deserved.
Yeah. It does have, I mean, a lot of people were talking about it is, you know, they were kind of put off by the violence, which is funny. Because
have they seen his other movies?
I know. Well, I mean, this is technically quote unquote Tarantino's second big unveiling to the world, you know, when you get his style and everything, and people were looking at it more as a Tony Scott film than a Tarantino movie. So, you know, that's understandable. Man, I'm looking. Oh my God. So they didn't get nominated for anything. Screenplay,
and
directing,
that blows my
acting.
Mind.
It's funny. Cause I mean, I love, okay. Yeah. This is not going to be a surprise to anyone. Cause I can't shut up about it, but I love Boyhood. I really do. I love Richard Linklater. Everyone knows this. I love Patricia Arquette in that movie. I think her performance is great. Kind of interesting. I would trade the Oscar for her performance in that movie for this one.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
Not that I mean, that's hard for me to say, but frankly, it is fascinating that she didn't even get a nomination for True Romance.
She is working with Moore in this film.
Yeah.
For sure.
I guess it's because, I mean, one, no one knows who Tarantino is. Two, I could see, I mean, based on the movies Tony Scott had made up to that point, I could see how somebody could look at this as maybe a little trashy as far as like the violence and the language and the sex and all, you know, the content is very intense. And up to that point, I mean, he'd made Top Gun, Days of Thunder. So a kind of very Hollywood movies, you know, so, you know, he wasn't being considered on the same level as like his brother, Ridley Scott, who was like, you know, had made Alien and Blade Runner. Although I don't think either of those were well received at the time either. But it is, maybe people were just very dismissive of it. And it is violent. The violent is, it's brutal. Very brutal at times. There's a lot of, I mean, it is. It's sensational. And I wonder if people were just put off by that. I can't imagine there's any other motivation for not recognizing how brilliant this film is other than just the bias against it. Like the violence, like, oh, it's too violent for the Academy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they just had to wait. They had to wait around for Patricia Arquette.
Yeah, they did. But then by the time Pulp Fiction came around, it's like, it's almost like Reservoir Dogs obviously announces Tarantino's talent, but I feel like True Romance really paves the way for Pulp Fiction. I frankly think True Romance is a better movie than Reservoir Dogs. I like Reservoir Dogs. It's definitely not my favorite. I know people love that movie.
By far. This is my favorite Tarantino movie. And I get it that it's not a complete Tarantino movie, but it kind of is.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I mean, there's a reason, like we mentioned in, you know, before we started the movie, that it is in this box set. You know,
it makes sense. It feels Tarantino.
And it's like out of every Tarantino movie I've ever seen, I always go back to this one. This is like it has the heart, it has the soul, and it has the violence.
Yeah,
you know.
But it's also it's unmistakably Tony Scott as well, which is just crazy. It's amazing to me.
It's very cool.
Yeah, and it's funny. I feel like this. If I were to introduce anyone to Tarantino. I mean, of course, I'd be like, watch Reservoir Dogs, but it's almost like True Romance is a better introduction to what you can expect from him than Reservoir Dogs. Reservoir Dogs, obviously, the violence and everything, but, you know, that's here, too. It's filtered through Tony Scott's kind of action oriented aesthetic, but it is, it's just as brutal as in Reservoir Dogs. But True Romance, I think, should be included in anyone. If anyone is going through Tarantino's movies and hasn't seen True Romance, you absolutely should watch it. But it should be included. You should watch it like Reservoir Dogs, then watch this, because it is, it's an integral piece to the Tarantino puzzle, I feel like.
Absolutely. And you need it.
Yeah. And of course, and again, people who haven't seen this movie were more dismissive of Tony Scott's talents, as I was, again, I would highly recommend watching this movie, because again, you know, a script makes a movie. That much is clear. And this, obviously, the script plays a huge part in why this movie's amazing. But Tony Scott, he was integral to this. This is unmistakably just the little I've seen of his filmography. I felt like, this is a Tony Scott movie. I feel that. And it's great. And he was able to lend his style and sensibilities to an amazing script to make a really, really wonderful movie. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, let me ask you a couple questions. First of all, how would you rank this in Tarantino's other movies? That's a tough question on the spot.
What
would you say?
Well, this is number one for me.
Oh, really? Your favorite?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
So if we were going to count this in a Tarantino filmography.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, okay. Always number one.
Wow.
I don't know if I can get through all of them, but
you don't have to rank all of them.
Okay. This is number one.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. And Pulp Fiction's number two, just in case anyone's curious, just to give you an idea.
That's great.
It's
a little too fresh for me right now.
Yeah.
I'd have to really think about it, but.
Well, we own it. We're going to watch it again.
I
mean,
I love Pulp Fiction. I love Kill Bill. Yeah, that's hard. I'll have to come back to that.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'd rank it, but I do love it. So it's unfair for me to ask you to have a firm answer.
You
but you did have a firm, you had the answer
it's
right
it.
Away.
This is it. Absolutely.
Okay.
Hands down.
So in that case, how many black Gary Oldmans would you give it on a scale of 1 to 5?
Oh, like 100? No, 5. I mean, I'll give it 5 black Gary Oldmans, Alabama's.
Yeah.
5 You're So Cools.
I think, let's give it You're So Cools. That's better. That's a little less racist than black Gary Oldman. Okay, so 5 You're So Cools.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hovering between 4 and 5. So I'll give it 4.5 for now.
That's
I feel
pretty
like this,
high.
Yeah, I feel like I could round up and give this a 5 at some point.
Yeah.
If there's anything I'm going to knock this movie for, and it's not enough, obviously, to make me not like it, it is kind of the fact that it does feel... The characters don't necessarily feel real, but you could say that for any Tarantino movie at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It was.
So that doesn't work it's a 5. Got it.
It's the fact I can't, you know, in every other movie, it's like, you know, Uma Thurman, the bride is, she's an assassin. John Travolta and Samuel Jackson, they're hitmen. So it makes sense for them to be in this world. With Clarence, I'm like, he was a comic book guy and his dad's a cop. But like, does that explain how he knows how to beat up everybody and kill Gary Oldman?
Maybe. I mean, he clearly came from that kind of...
Maybe I'm just upset that he killed
background.
Gary Oldman.
I think that might be it.
Hoping maybe they could just be like, look, let's hug it out, and then Gary Oldman could be in the rest of the movie as that character.
Yeah. So you were just mentioning Kill Bill. So as just a funny aside, so you know the sunglasses that Clarence wears? They're the same sunglasses that Uma Thurman's character wears. Yeah. Isn't that cool? So after she wakes up from the coma and like beats up that guy, she takes the sunglasses. Those are the same ones.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
It's all a connected universe. And I'm going
to
also believe that they're actually in the universe at Clarence's glasses, actual sunglasses, beyond just the fact that it's a prop. I'm going to believe that somehow they got into the hands of that security guard and ended up in the bride's hands or on her face.
Yeah.
But okay, great. Yeah,
works
so
for
yeah,
me.
True Romance, amazing. Highly recommend
it.
Go
see it.
Obviously, if you're listening to this, I hope you've seen it already.
Yeah.
Because we've spoiled the entire movie. But I would love to hear everyone else's thoughts on True Romance. You can berate me for taking so long to see it. I'm at @YeShondorman on Twitter. Sarah, where can the lovely people of the interwebs find you?
I'm with Love Alone on Twitter and Instagram.
Great. And also check out the Nerd Party in general. We're here. We're happening. It's great. And there's so many awesome shows. Love everyone on the Nerd Party, in the Nerd Party, whatever, all of the above. So highly recommend checking out other shows on thenerdparty.com. Like the page on Facebook. It's just The Nerd Party. And then you can also follow them on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. And let us know. Just let us know. I'm down to chat about this movie. And other than that, Sarah, thank you so much.
This Thanks has for been having
an
me.
Immense pleasure. You know what, audience? You're so cool.
Love's a heavy weight. Give it to me, don't hesitate.